10. I sat at the Denny's in Tucumcari, staring out the window. What had I been thinking? I'd taken an unspecified leave of absence for my job, and a mere 3 days later, I was already set to pack it in and head home. Las Vegas had been a waste of time. I hadn't learned anything new in Bernalillo, and despite my nightmare experience in Biscuitville, I hadn't gotten any information out of that witch at the B&B. I wanted justice. I wanted closure. But was I going to get it by doing this? Driving pointlessly across the country from house to house? I figured I should just give it up now before throwing away even more time and money. It was Mike Rivera who set me on the right path. He called me at that moment, as I was drinking coffee and watching a semi pass by on Interstate 40. Mike was not only showing two of the homes I had listed, but he'd spent half of yesterday going through my computer looking for unfinished business. Somehow, I'd forgotten to delete a portion of my recent research, and he had looked up and found a current address for Frank Watkins, the name he used in Randall. His real name? I couldn't believe it. Yeah, it looked like you were searching for this guy who'd been using a bunch of aliases, and had something to do with that Big Bear sale. I figured I could help. He's pretty low-tech, but you can't stay off the grid if you're selling houses and paying utilities. He actually wasn't that hard to track. Mike had a facility with computers that went far beyond mine. At one time, he'd been a low-level programmer at a failed startup, but he'd found he could equal his tech income with real estate, a job it turned out he enjoyed much, much more. I probably should have enlisted his help earlier, but I'd been wary of involving anyone else. Although, if it had been so easy to find Frank, I wondered why law enforcement hadn't been able to do it. According to Mike, Frank was back in Nevada, a nowhere town called Feldspar. It was somewhere in the empty center of the state, and I had Mike email me the information so I could access it on my phone. I assume this means you'll be back soon, he said. Probably, I admitted. It was stupid for me to take a leave. I should have just banked a few extra vacation days. I don't know what I was thinking. That's cool, Mike told me. I heard the disappointment in his voice and smiled. You and May can keep those listings I gave you. A promise is a promise. Besides, I owe you for this info. Glad you're coming back, he said heartily. And this time he meant it. He lowered his voice. With only May and Jim here, the atmosphere is a little... Serious? Sterile, I was gonna say. I need you around to help loosen the corsets. We talked a few moments longer. He had questions about one of my listings in Tustin that he was going to be showing later today. The real reason he called. And I told him everything I knew. I was anxious to get him off the phone and start off for Nevada. And the second he hung up, I downed the rest of my coffee and called for my check. My GPS was working again, but the shortest route to Feldspar was through some of the most godforsaken country known to man. Thank goodness for satellite radio, which allowed me to listen to music while traveling through desert where no regular radio stations could reach. I spent that night at a real motel, a Holiday Inn Express, and I'd never in my life been so grateful for the bland anonymity of corporate America. After that hellish B&B, the antiseptic atmosphere of a generic Holiday Inn was the most welcome end of the day I could imagine. I ate a dinner of grilled chicken with wild rice pilaf in the adjacent restaurant, took my first shower in 2 days, and fell asleep in air-conditioned comfort to the sounds of the Tonight Show. In the morning, I had a continental breakfast that was closer to a real breakfast than anything I'd had since leaving home. Refreshed, reinvigorated, and ready, I set off for Feldspar. It was mid-morning when I reached the town. Feldspar was only slightly larger than Biscuitville, and I decided then and there that when this was all over, I was going to spend the rest of my life safely within the confines of the endless metropolis that was Southern California. My GPS was still working, and it directed me to a residential street off the short main drag. to an empty lot. I stopped the car. Not again. I was filled with a deep sense of disappointment. I wasn't sure what I'd expected to find. Frank holed up alone in a run-down shack, or living in a perfectly maintained tract home? But I honestly thought that I'd see him. I'd even gone over different scenarios in my head, planning out possible conversations and numerous opening lines as I'd driven through the empty, arid land. Now, once again, it was all for naught. Parking in front of the empty lot, I got out to look around, amidst the dried weeds, empty beer cans, broken glass, and wind-blown detritus. The ground was rough. There were post-sized holes and lengthy trenches that appeared to have been dug for pipes. It was as though the house that had once been here had been ripped up and pulled into the sky, foundation, plumbing, and all. I had a bad feeling about this. On the off chance that one of the neighbors might know what had happened, I walked across the street to where a skinny old man in a dirty tank top was sweeping his porch, a futile exercise in this environment. "Excuse me," I said. He looked up, squinting against the sun. "Yeah? Do you know anything about that lot across the street? I'm looking for a man named Frank." "Frank?" he said. "Yeah, I know Frank. He used to have a house there." I could feel my pulse accelerating. "You wouldn't happen to know where he is now, would you?"
"At his new house, I assume."
"New house?"
"Yeah, built it himself. Been building it for a long time, in fact. I remember when he first started. Took me out to see it once. Back then, it was just one room, hardly bigger than a storage shed. But he just kept adding on and adding on, keeping nails and pipes and scraps of lumber from other jobs he did, and using them for to put up his own blaze. Kind of like that Johnny Cash song about the car. You know, where he steals a little bit at a time from the assembly line and builds himself a one-of-a-kind automobile."
I didn't know the song, but that didn't matter. I knew Frank's pattern. A thought occurred to me. "Did Frank steal from you?" The old man laughed raspily.
"Hell yeah! Had him put in a new faucet. He bought extra parts, charged them to me, and kept the rest. Built a deck for me in the back, overbought lumber, and kept the extra boards. Oh, it was harmless, but he couldn't help himself. That's just who he was. Like this uncle I had, used to cop something every time he came over. Ashtray, lighter, apple, penny, whatever. Nicest guy in the world. Give you the shirt off his back, but he just had to take stuff when he stopped by."
"And Frank was like that?" I prodded. "Stole things?"
"Oh, yeah. Stole from himself, even. Or recycled, I guess. That's why there ain't no house there no more."
He pointed his broom toward the lot.
"Once he moved out for good, he started tearing the place apart, taking wood and siding and plumbing, piece by piece, until there was nothing left."
"Do you still see Frank?" I asked. The old man hesitated for a little too long.
"Frank don't get out much anymore. I think he mostly just stays inside his house."
"Yeah, he must be pretty old," I reasoned. There was another weird pause.
"I guess so."
"You wouldn't happen to know where this house is, would you?"
"Sure. I even drive there sometimes, just to see how things are coming along. I don't stop. Frank likes his privacy, but I do check the place out. And it's, impressive."
"How do I get there?" I asked him. Another hesitation.
"I'm not sure."
"I need to see him." The old man looked me over, appraising me. He seemed to like Frank, and perhaps thought he was acting as a gatekeeper, so I didn't want to let him know how I really felt. I tried to keep my expression neutral. "Frank knew my family back in Randall, Arizona. I haven't seen him for a long time." I put on my best professional smile, extended my hand. "My name's Daniel. Daniel Martin. I'm in real estate now." He shook my hand noncommittally.
"Petey Bodine."
He thought for a moment.
"I don't think Frank's interested in selling."
"That's not why I want to see him." He gave me that appraising look again.
"When was it you knew Frank?"
"Mid-80s, I said.
"Well, Frank hasn't changed. Frank's still Frank.
I wasn't sure if that was a warning or just an acknowledgement that he knew what Frank was like, too. I nodded as though I understood, still smiling, keeping my expression neutral. Petey must have decided that I was all right.
It's kind of hard to find his place. I'll lead you out there. Just give me a minute.
He walked around the side of the house to the carport, putting away his broom. I walked across the street to my car. After going into the house to get his keys, but not a shirt, he backed out in his Jeep, and I followed him through the town and down a single-lane road out into the desert. It was a lot farther away than I thought it would be, and I had plenty of time to go over things in my mind. Since Mike had found the Feldspar property, but had not found this new location where Frank had apparently built a house and was living, I wondered if it was in his own name, if he had set up some sort of shell corporation, or if he'd simply used a new fake name that had nothing to do with Frank. I also regretted not asking Petey if Frank was still married. I was pretty sure Irene was dead. Tap, 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 tap. But then again, even in the hot light of day, the thought of encountering a really old Irene made me shiver. As 15 minutes became a half hour, and a half hour became 45 minutes, I started glancing at my fuel gauge, thinking I should have filled up before we left Feldspar. The road wound through a series of low sandy foothills before finally straightening out and sloping into a flat barren valley containing a single two-story structure that looked like one of those green-shuttered red-chimneyed homes featured on the cover of elementary school reading books. Frank's house. I knew what it was immediately, and when Petey's Jeep sped up, I followed suit. The old man turned around directly in front of the house, honked his horn, pointed at it, waved to me, and sped off back the way we had come. I'd expected him to stay, maybe introduce me, at least leave me with some additional information, and the fact that he was in such a hurry to take off left me feeling a little unsettled. There were no fences enclosing the property, nothing blocking the house from someone on the road who wished to approach. The remoteness of the location and the isolation of the road itself was probably protection enough, but I wouldn't have been surprised to learn that security cameras were trained on me. Hesitating for only a second, I turned onto the short dirt driveway, pulled up directly in front of the structure, and got out of the car. It was a Frank house, all right. What from a distance had appeared to be a stereotypical example of a mid-20th century upper-middle-class family home was revealed on closer inspection to be a poorly constructed hodgepodge of stucco wall and aluminum siding and wood frame, with a roof that was half shingle, one-quarter shake, and one-quarter plain old tar paper, all joined together in a manner that was far from seamless. The windows I saw were mirrored. I shouldn't be here alone, I thought. I should contact the law. Let the police handle this. I should have, but I didn't. Ignoring my misgivings, I pressed forward, walking up the slanted porch. I looked for some sort of doorbell, saw none, and was about to raise my fist and knock, when the door suddenly swung open, revealing a man standing in the foyer before me. Frank. He looked exactly the same as he had all those years ago. He was even wearing those narrow striped engineer's overalls, and just seeing him sent a shiver down my spine. Frank hasn't changed. I knew now what Petey had meant, and what had made the old man so hesitant to answer my questions. I understood also why he had taken off so quickly after bringing me here. He was afraid. I was afraid, too. And everything I'd planned to say upon meeting Frank once again had fled my head, leaving me tongue-tied and dumb. I could tell from the expression on his face that he knew the effect he had on me and relished it. I could tell also that he recognized me, and that was the most frightening thing. I'd been a child when he last saw me, and I was an adult now who looked nothing like that scrawny young boy. Yet he instantly knew who I was. Daniel, he said, come in. And there it was. The stare. Awkward and inappropriate, and held too long. I was reminded of the times he'd tried to lure me and Billy into his pickup. I might have been a grown man, but the dynamic between us was the same as it had always been. I felt like a kid with him, a frightened little kid. There'd always been something wrong with Frank. I'd known it even as a child, and the years of experience since had only added a depth of unwanted insight into his words and actions. I walked through the doorway, entering the house, not sure if I was doing so because I wanted to confront him or because I was submissively following his prompt. The sense of purpose that had been driving me up to this point seemed to have dissipated and faded away. Neither of us had spoken since I'd stepped into the foyer. I glanced around. There was an oriental rug lying on a floor that was supposed to be hardwood, but, in typical Frank style, seemed to be varnished paneling. Like its exterior, the inside of the house was as incompetently put together as everything else the man had worked on. Against the wall, impossibly, I saw our old couch, the one from Randall that we thought Frank had sold at his garage sale. My breath caught in my throat as a wave of unexpected memories washed over me. Sitting on the sofa playing Monopoly with Billy during a late summer thunderstorm. Unwrapping Christmas presents with my mom. Watching Cheers with my dad. Billy, impaled on that triangular board, his open eyes staring up at me from beneath the house through the hole in the floor.
So how's your brother? Frank said,
smiling, staring. My anger returned, and with it, my sense of purpose. I remembered that Billy and I had never gotten into Frank's truck back then. We'd walked away from him. Frank hasn't changed. How's your wife? I retorted, certain that she was dead and wanting to hurt him.
I have only the dark wife now.
What did that mean? The phrase was ominous, and the tone of voice in which Frank said it made my skin crawl.
I needed to get out of here, I realized. I wasn't some movie vigilante. I wasn't going to kill Frank out of revenge or even kick his ass.
Now that I knew where he was, I needed to go to the police, tell them where to find him, and let them take care of it. There was no statute of limitations on murder. And even if they couldn't pin anything else on him, they had him dead to rights on the boy walled up in his basement. The door had closed behind me, although whether on purpose in an effort to trap me here, or merely because Frank had not hung the door right or mounted the hinges correctly, I couldn't say. I was turning to let myself out when he spoke again.
I hear you've been looking for me.
I swung back to face him. It was out in the open now. I wasn't sure how he could have heard that, or who he could have heard it from, but he obviously knew that I'd been searching for him, and I didn't bother to deny it. The police have been looking for you too, I told him. You belong in jail for what you've done.
And what have I done? He said innocently. Built a few houses? Worked on some construction projects?
Killed a few pets? Buried a few bodies? Stolen some materials? Frank's expression clouded over.
I never stole anything in my life.
It was interesting that that was the only charge he tried to deny. You stole the paneling that came with our house, and you used it to finish your upstairs. I pointed to the sofa. And you stole our couch.
Your daddy gave me.
My dad didn't give you shit. He went to the cops when he found out what you'd done. And the only reason you're not rotting in jail right now is because they were a bunch of incompetent assholes. My agitation seemed to make him calmer.
It's been a long time. Maybe it was your mama who...
She hated you. He smiled.
Your mama fed me a dirty breakfast. I saw her eat a filthy sandwich.
I had no idea what he was talking about. It made no sense whatsoever. But the implication was definitely sexual. And when I saw the smutty leer on his face, I wanted to smack it off.
Don't you even mention her, I warned. He smiled meanly. Your mama's bones are in my home. I dug them up in the dead of night. I went to that cemetery in Anaheim, across from the Pancake House. The original Pancake House. I felt sick to my stomach. He knew where she'd been buried. And I paid off a guy, and I dug up her coffin and opened it up and took her bones. I left your daddy there, though. Didn't want the two of them to be together.
You bastard!
I yelled, and tried to punch him. But the door opened behind me, and somehow Frank was next to me, avoiding my fist and pushing me outside. Thanks for stopping by, he said. Don't come again. The door slammed shut. I pounded on it, attempted to open it, sought to get back in, even though only moments before I had been desperate to leave. My anger overwhelmed my common sense, and though I knew the smartest course of action would be to notify the police, what I wanted to do was kick his ass. Not that I could. He hadn't aged in all these decades, and I was still afraid of him. I stared up at the facade of the house. It seemed impossible, but maybe my mom's bones were inside, buried under a floor or interred behind a wall. The thought of it made me crazy. I felt disgusted and depressed and angry all at the same time. It was best to just get the police out here. Reaching the car, I got in and turned the key, half expecting that, as in some bad horror movie, it wouldn't start. It did, though, and I flipped on the satellite radio, starting when I heard a DJ talk about a Dodgers game the night before. That wasn't possible. They were off last night. I switched the channel to CNN, where after a rundown of the hour's top headlines, the anchor announced that it was 10 o'clock, Monday, August 21st. Monday? The 21st? I'd been inside Frank's house for 6 days.